Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
We play with the same heart, fire, and no quit like we did last year. You know what? I wouldn't be totally surprised to see us really competing. Nobody picked us, Chuck, in 2005. You following me? What I'm saying is if things roll right, you never know.
That was White Sox pitching coach Don Cooper last week on the podcast saying, don't brush aside the White Sox in 2018. He believes the Sox can really compete. So can they? What will it take? And a little hint on my end, I think they can compete in 2018. That is the subject of this edition of the White Sox Talk podcast brought to you by Wintrust Community Bank, home of White Sox checking with free ATMs nationwide. For more information, go to their special White Sox webpage, www.wintrust.com/Sox. So Chuck Garfin here with Ryan McGuffey and Chris Kamka as we delve into this subject. Let's begin with, what is competing? How would you define competing, Ryan McGuffey?
I would define competing as being a player in the wild card race. So in this case, the second wild card race. You are a absolute legit threat as we hit August into Labor Day weekend, playing with, let's say, within 2 to 3 games of that second wild card. That, to me, is competing. 500's not, I mean, I guess at this day and age, 500 is competing, but you are a playoff threat. That's what competition, that's what compete to me means.
To me, compete means, you know, being able to be somewhere around 500. It isn't necessarily getting to a wild card.
Being around 500 gets you, it puts you in the, at least the mix.
I don't think so. I mean, it could.
Yeah.
It could. I think competing is being a team that you can't just write off. Being a team that you have to...
That has a chance, and it's July.
Yeah, it's a team that is not one that's classified as tanking or one that's classified as necessarily in the beginning stage of a rebuild anymore. This is a team that's in season two of this thing, and we've seen teams start to get to that level of looking better in about this stage. I don't think they're going to, I wouldn't say wild card.
Okay.
But close to 500 is, I think, a reasonable goal.
What's yours, though?
What's mine? Well, I'm going to go into this in great detail as to why I think they can compete in 2018. And I would even go a step further in saying they can potentially be in the conversation for a wild card. I'm not saying they're going to do it, but if things...
I'm looking forward to you pulling me over to that side.
I'm looking forward to you pulling me over to that side.
Let's see what happens.
And we've got a winner, by the way, of the Nikki Delmonico trivia game, which we had last week on the podcast. Should we name the winner now?
Yeah, let's do it. Let's do it. We made him wait last week. Let's do it.
Okay, so here was Nikki's trivia question from last week to all of you.
My trivia question is, who did I hit my first home run off of in the big leagues?
And the answer is, Chris Kamka?
It's Rick Porcello. And he wasn't the first White Sox player to hit his first career home run off of a former Cy Young Award winner in 2017.
Ooh. Who was the first?
Kevin Smith.
Yoan Moncada.
Oh, of course, Jake Arrieta.
There you go.
Yes.
Well done. Well,
yes, I love it.
And everyone listening is like, okay, let's get to it. Who won? The winner is... Connor Kerrigan.
Oh, Connor, my man.
Connor Kerrigan, you are the winner of
awesome.
Sox Fest tickets. You have two
weekend
free passes
the
whole weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Cheap. Maybe we'll figure out a way to you and Nikki Delmonico meet up. He's going to be at our booth on Saturday morning, for instance, doing a podcast with you and I.
Oh, can we release that information out? We just did.
We just did.
Nikki should we just say who he's going to be
Jake
with?
Berger.
Jake Berger.
But, you know, well, maybe we'll figure something out. 9:45.
Okay. So, Connor, someone from NBC Sports Chicago will be sending you a direct message on Twitter for those Sox Fest tickets. So congratulations to you. And by the way, we did this randomly. It wasn't like we said, oh, Connor looks like a good guy. Let's let him win.
Yeah.
It was some kind of like random generator they did on a spreadsheet.
Using the hashtag authentic fan, I'll just say this. I know my feed was inundated with them. Yours had to be quadruple mine, and then the NBC Sports Chicago one had to just be like 12 times that. So thank you for all of you, because there were so many of you that responded.
Probably a few hundred or more.
Easily a few more. We really appreciate it.
All right. All right, coming up, can the White Sox compete in 2018? Inquiring minds want to know. We're going to dig deep into this right here, right now. Let's do it. Can the White Sox follow Don Cooper's credo and compete in 2018? I want to start with an article written just a couple days ago by ESPN's Richard Justice. I don't know if you saw this. He listed five teams that could surprise us in 2018. Mm-hmm. He said the Braves, Phillies, A's, Padres, White Sox.
And shockingly, they're all teams that are like with great farm systems that are on this end of the rebuild.
And then he offered his little... I think they should do this.
I want to add to it. Here's the quote from Richard Justice. No team is more interesting than this one. Talking about the White Sox. Thanks to GM Rick Hahn's organizational rebuild around kids. With kids come uncertainty, but kids also bring hope. The young guys got valuable experience last season, and that learning process will continue in 2018. How quickly they settle in and show off their talent is the unknown, but it'll happen at some point. There is Richard Justice.
Well, I mean, he's right, but
will it happen in 2018?
Well, just like some of them got experience last year. Yeah. Not all. I mean, all of them got great experience last year throughout the system, from low A, the rookie ball, all the way up. But not all of those guys he's referring to, the guys you're expecting to help you, let's say, use the word compete in 2018, aren't starting here in 2018.
Right. But where I'm going at is I'm not just talking about the prospects. I'm talking about the guys who are already on the Major League roster and guys who are no longer on the Major League roster, which I wanted to delve into. Mm-hmm. I mean, let's just start with the pitching staff that they had last year.
Great.
That is the worst White Sox pitching staff I've ever seen.
Do you know who led the team in innings pitched last year? I know, Chris, you probably know off the top of your head.
I do.
Was it Jose Quintana?
No.
It was not.
Was it – oh, man, this is good. Innings pitched.
Who led the White
James
Sox?
James Shields.
No.
No.
The number is 135.
He didn't finish the season.
Derek Holland.
Derek Holland was your leader in innings pitch, and he was DFA'd.
Okay, so this is here are some stats I came up with. All right. They had the highest ERA as a pitching staff for the White Sox since 2004, 4.78. The most walks since 1975. Most home runs given up ever. 242 home runs they gave up, 18 more than the previous record. I sound like Chris Kampka here. They had the least amount of saves in a non-strike year since 1976. They had no complete games. First time ever. 2016, they had 7 complete games. Last year, they had none. And then I had to call Chris yesterday because I found this. You know, I'm going to give this to you, Chris, or give this to you, Guff.
All right.
Who led the White Sox in strikeouts last year?
That's a great one. I'm going to say.
Why do you think Chuck answered what he answered?
I'm going to say Tommy Canley.
Ooh, Jose Quintana.
Yeah.
I bet Canley was up there, though.
So, but listen to this.
He might, yeah. He probably was.
I'm going to repeat this question, or I'll give you the answer. Jose Quintana led the White Sox in strikeouts with 109.
Right.
Yeah. And last time, the leader of the White Sox in strikeouts was lower than 109. This is where I asked. You know what? Since I asked Chris to look this up, Chris, why don't you provide the answer?
1981. That was a strike year.
Wow.
So if you take a non-strike year, the answer is 1949. And Billy Pierce led the team with 95. So that's how far back you got to go. And so when you asked me, will the White Sox compete in 2018, when you define compete as going for a wild card, I say no, because from what you just called the worst White Sox pitching staff perhaps ever.
Well, I've ever seen.
Right. So the worst White Sox pitching staff you've ever seen to jump to competing for a wild card next year seems to be an awful jump.
I agree.
And so I don't think it's going to happen.
But who's?
But there's
going to
be big improvement, though. Right, that's the key.
Oh, yeah. So Derek Holland, okay, he had an ERA of 6.20. He gone.
I know.
Dylan Covey went 0-7 with a 7.71 ERA. I don't think he's going to be.
I'm going to interrupt you.
Yeah.
They have their projected five-man rotation right now. And I don't put Carlos Rodon into this mix.
Okay.
None of them pitched 200 innings. Four of them, actually, put Rodon. Five of the six have never had a season of 200 innings, and the last time James Shields did it was 3 years ago. So I'm with Chris. I just like three of these guys. I don't necessarily want pitching 200 innings. Almost.
They're not going to go off.
It won't happen.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now they're.
I'm not saying they can't like.
You
be
can still compete and not
right,
have.
Gonna, you can.
I think
especially
here's,
in today's
here's
game.
The deal.
Yeah, bullpens, yeah. No
2018,
doubt.
We wanted to see improvement. That's the key. Improvement. We didn't do too well last year.
No.
There's plenty of room for improvement and still not be able to contend.
All right. They went 67-95 last year. There was that time that they just kept throwing out David Holmberg,
yep.
You know, getting start after start. Dylan Covey, okay, yeah, throw him out there. They were just giving away games. They really were. I mean, I don't see them doing that this year.
That kind of was the plan.
No, I'm not faulting them. I'm just saying by them doing that and injuries, but by them doing that, okay, yeah, you're going to lose 95 games. I'd like to think that that kind of stuff isn't going to happen this year. I'd like to think that.
Well, this
year. And if that doesn't happen, there's 10 wins right there.
Oh, hold on now. All right, now – So as far as improvement's concerned, know that the White Sox finished the season 22-22 in their final 44 games.
Right. Yeah.
Right? So that's good. And you know why they did? Because the guys they were bringing up were making an impact.
And I'm going
that's
on
why
that
we got
too.
That's why we got to feel very enthusiastic. Now, going from 67 wins, I think, to 77 wins is a very reasonable expectation. That's improvement.
Yeah. So if that's what competing is, the competing thing, it may take me the entire podcast to kind of be swayed to exactly which way I want to
go. The Minnesota Twins, let's look at them as a comp.
I have the Twins written down here. You basically are saying, that's what I thought going into this podcast.
Yeah, but hold on, though. Let me stop you right there. To use the Twins as a comp is very, very, let's be cautious there. Why? Because the Twins are the first team ever to do what they did. So you don't want to use a team that's the first ever,
did,
the only time,
worst to
playoffs, or worst to whatever it was.
Well, now two teams improved about the same amount last year. The Twins and the Diamondbacks improved about 25. The Twins improved. They went from 59-103 to 85-77, and the Diamondbacks improved by 24 games.
But we're looking at a pretty historic event here, right?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
don't set the precedent as a historic event, because you're just going to set yourself up for failure. I think you should be modest and say, hey, 10 wins this year. Let's go another 10 the next year.
Okay.
Look, 77-85 is...
You'll take it.
So the White Sox went 67-95 last year. If they can improve it 15 games, that's 82 wins.
Yeah. And that's competing.
You have to
now
be.
You're competing.
Because I
thrilled with that. I would.
Thrilled. Weren't the Twins a wild card?
When we say competing, don't think, well, if you have 82 wins at the end of the year, you're not competing. It's more of like, if you have 82 wins at the end of the year, that means that in May, June, July, usually, you're not buried in last place. You're competing. You're around 500.
Games.
You're in games.
That's what I'm talking about.
And there's carrot there.
Yeah, 85 wins got the Twins a wild card. So 82 wins put you right where I said at the beginning of this podcast, competing, three games back.
Now, to dig a little deeper in with the Twins, they went from, I'm comparing 2016 to 2017. So in 2016, when they lost 103 games. So they went from 16th in runs to 7th last year. So they made a jump of 10 spots.
Mm-hmm.
ERA, they went from 29th to 19th. The White Sox last year were 23rd in runs. They were 25th in ERA. So they need to make a jump.
And I think they will. I do think they will, because you had a lot, like, we're talking about waiting for pieces to come this year, but you're not waiting for all of them to come like they were last year. So some of those pieces are here now. Moncada's going to be in the lineup every single day. I love the idea of Abreu, Moncada, Timmy Anderson. Even like if Delmonico plays off of anything that he did last year, Avi Garcia following up an all-star year.
I think Tim Anderson will be better next year.
He has to be better. He has to be better last year. Like, he had obviously a personal situation. He, at the end of, you talked about that 22-22, he was a big reason that he really kind of finished the season.
They have
on
a catcher.
They have a catcher. That's a huge point. You're bringing me over, Chuck.
I know.
You're bringing me over.
I know.
They're going to be better. And I think You know who the wild card is to me for a good 2018? It's Tim Anderson. That's the wild card.
The wild card, I see
if, you're saying. If he shows big improvement, which I think he's completely capable of doing, there you go.
I think Tim Anderson, if Delmonico is half right about Adam Engel last week, about being any kind of contributor offensively in center field, because you know the glove is there. But to me, the wild card, so to speak, in this is the bullpen.
Yeah.
But 4 weeks ago, I would have told you, I would have laughed at this question about competing, because the bullpen, I had no idea what was happening. And now I'm going, okay, like
with Soria and with Avilan.
Yeah, and I can't say his name. Thiago Vieira.
Vieira.
I
think he's going to make the team.
I do too, I absolutely do. And I think Nate Jones is a wild card. I mean,
and then people might have forgotten this when most fans probably checked out in September. There was a development with two pitchers in the bullpen that all of a sudden were looking really good, and that's Minaya and Infante.
Yeah.
Minaya saved his last five appearances were all save opportunities, saved them all against the Astros, Royals, Angels twice, and the Indians. And then Infante, in his last 2 months, had ERAs in the ones for 2 months. So there's some stuff going on there in the bullpen.
Just be serviceable.
Yeah.
We're going to need to lean heavily on this bullpen this year because, like I've said before, I mean,
Lopez, that's the problem.
Lopez, Giolito, and rookie X that comes up midseason, be it
well, don't forget about Fulmer.
Kopech.
Don't forget about Fulmer.
Fulmer, too. Okay?
I mean,
those guys are in the rotation.
Yeah.
They're going to have outings where they just struggle.
Absolutely.
And I think it would be wise to, they got to be in a position where, all right, these guys are struggling today. Let's pull them. Let's get them in the right mindset. And let's not stress them, push them too far. So you're going to have a lot of opportunities to eat up some innings.
I don't know if I necessarily am going to buy that, because last year that's what got you in trouble every fifth day with Mike Pelfrey. 4 1/3, 4 innings, 3 2/3.
Yeah, but –
and then that bullpen was so stressed. I mean, I know you made seven members of that bullpen were traded, mm-hmm. seven guys who broke with the club.
That's another reason
year.
Why they lost 95 games.
Well,
they did
no
good
doubt.
For the first half, and then 100%. There was no one left.
I mean, they didn't have anybody but Minaya to throw out there at the end of the season.
But I'm going to stick with what I said, though. It's the most stressful innings when you're in trouble. And you're pushing these guys 120 pitches
four
innings.
Well, I'm with you on that.
Can't have that.
Well, what we have.
So that's the importance of a Chris Fulstead, who they invited to minor league camp.
He never even made it. Oh, he did come up here and make like one start.
Right. By the way, his last start, he got a win. His previous win was with the Cubs against the Astros, who were in the National League at the time. So in his last two wins were against the Astros. The Astros were in different leagues, and he was pitching for a different Chicago team each time.
Was it 2012? I feel like it was that long ago.
I think you're right. Yeah. He had a long stretch of like a winless. But anyway, I think that's the kind of pitcher who's going to come up here and be like a swing man, eat some innings, cover some.
They're going to need a few of those.
But let's do that, though. Let's do that.
Look, and we haven't mentioned the two guys who could be.
Go ahead. Okay. Yeah.
Me and Gus sometimes have the same brain. It's so funny. Two guys who can make a big impact, and that's going to be Michael Kopech and Eloy Jimenez whenever they come up.
I also think there's another guy in there, Carlos Rodon.
Yeah.
Carlos Rodon, in some ways, you can look at like, and this sounds crazy maybe a little bit, but like a prospect this year. Because I think it's going to be about that June, July time frame. We don't know. I mean, but it doesn't sound like Don Cooper's preparing for Carlos Rodon anytime soon. We'll get to talk to him in a few days. We'll see what happens. But I think you can look – when he came up last year and when he got going, when he was right in that stretch there,
25 years old still.
I know.
Right?
Yep.
And you heard him with the Don Cooper podcast. He's like, I just don't think that I've taken this stuff as seriously and done it as critically as I can.
Yeah.
He's learning. He's young. He's going to get this figured out. And you're going to hopefully maybe you see with the extra emphasis on conditioning, you don't see the arm problem, whatever problems it is, you don't see it anymore.
I'll tell you one thing. Obviously, I'm going to drink the Kopech Kool-Aid because he's been great to me. That guy, the way he prepares, off the field, on the field, mentally, I really believe in my heart that he's going to be dominant. I think he's going to be dominant.
I remember
who was dominating for the in the pitching staff last year for the White Sox.
Who was dominating?
Kaelin Swarzak.
Okay.
Yeah.
That they
right.
those are so
they dominated.
Key.
What starters did?
Okay. What starters?
No one.
Nobody. And you see the little bit of
a little bit of Giolito
maybe
a couple
Giolito,
times.
But
He's going to be better.
Except for like one start where he had 10 strikeouts.
Yeah.
He was more of a rely on contact kind of guy. But the confidence is there.
I mean, they're going to – I would have that K-zone ready, Brooks Boyer, section 154, whatever it was.
Kopech.
When Kopech comes
up,
man.
Though,
they may
remember,
not do it his rookie year.
Don't be – hey, why – you know.
I don't know.
Let's why sleep on it?
Well, last year, that guy, Gordon Beckham. I'm not saying he's
Gordon
Beckham. Don't pipe
Gordon. No. Come on.
I'm just saying from a marketing lesson – you
yeah,
wait a little
you're
bit.
You're probably right. I know
last
that
year,
you're
though.
Probably
he's
right.
He's not but Gordon Beckham, but you know
if
what
he is, this whole podcast should just
yeah, this
go
whole
off.
Rebuild
we should just turn it off.
Spring training last year, the first time I saw Kopech, I was, oh, my God, because he was blown. He came in against the Cubs.
Oh, yeah.
That
oh,
was when he struck out five
and
six.
He
saw it,
yeah. Blew them away, and I'm like, uh-oh.
And here's one more reason why I think the White Sox can compete. It's a Hawk Harrelson catchphrase and cliche, but it is true. Ricky's boys don't quit. This team plays hard, really hard. And it was Rodon, actually, who said on the podcast, I think last year, where he says, you know what? You can just tell when we sit in the dugout and we see how hard our team plays versus how hard the other team plays.
Mm-hmm.
And there is something about youth that, you know, when you got a young team that plays hard and plays hard for their manager, that usually means some wins over the course of a long season as well.
Playing off of that, it was definitely the most fun 95 loss season that I've ever been a part of since I was like 8 or 9, when I didn't really care about wins and losses as much because I didn't understand there was like a World Series to win. Mm-hmm. But we've talked so much about the young guys and the prospects. The veterans on this team, the youth that they feel, you know, mm-hmm. like the fountain of youth that Jose Abreu gets, that guys like Yomer Sanchez bring to the team. You know, I think you forget about the age of a Carlos Rodon who's been up here. Just, oh, he's a veteran. Well, not really. He doesn't have the innings necessarily pitch.
Yep.
I think Wellington Castillo is a perfect fit for mm-hmm. this whole youth movement. Nicky Delmonico is a young 26. I just think there's the veteran mix that's on this team right now. Even James Shields, and I know that name doesn't
He carries a lot of weight in the clubhouse.
He carries a lot of weight in the clubhouse, and it doesn't resonate with Sox fans, but they like James Shields. And he has that Aaron Rowan, you know, he's got the blood. He's got the blood, and it's an infectious clubhouse.
James really Shields has made a postseason run. He's pitched in the World Series. You mean that's not a valuable thing for Lucas Giolito to go up to him, Ronaldo Lopez to go up to him and say, hey, you know, I'm going through this stuff here. I've never experienced this in my career. This kind of, you know, whether it's a soreness or just a mental block or how do I attack these hitters? You think that's not valuable for these guys to ask Shields?
Look, guys are signing here because they know what's going on, and they're signing here because of the manager. Wellington Castillo was the first guy that did it. Why the hell do you think Miguel Gonzalez came back?
Mm-hmm.
He knows he could be dealt again in July, but he loves the idea of being here. And I think the longer this goes on, another year from now, you're going to have more and more guys. There's people out there. I talked to Josh Tomlin down in Texas when I was with Kopech. And Tomlin, this story was amazing. Off camera, he tells me, I went to Tito Francona last July, and I said, Tito, we better get this done soon because the White Sox are coming. He said, and I did that in the middle of the year. He goes, I've never cared about a prospect in my life. He goes, but why the hell am I looking up Eloy Jimenez on Twitter? Because I'm aware. I know what's going on.
Yeah.
People in the game know what's going on with the Chicago White Sox.
Yeah. And that's interesting you say that. And I just feel like the other thing that's missing is the roster isn't finished.
Nope.
There's player X and Y and Z who Rick Hahn's going to bring into this clubhouse. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know if it's going to be Melky Cabrera or some kind of veteran presence, a Jimmy Rollins type signing. Now that didn't work out so well, although we loved it at the time when they signed him. But you know, he's scouring the league going, who would fit? Who's going to help?
Melky was my pick at Reggie's.
Who's going to help Michael Kopech when he comes up?
Yeah.
Who's going to help my outfield? Who's going to help this? And I think that's yet to be determined.
And with there's 100 and some odd free agents still.
Yeah,
so
that's the deal.
You with 100 plenty. Plus free agents, you know, we're still waiting for the big $150 million guys to go.
Yeah. All right, so have I convinced you to come to their side there, Goff? Where are you at with the competing in 2018?
I certainly expect them to be better, and I expect them not to quit, and I expect them to win more games because the Tigers are awful and the Royals aren't much better, then you have the Twins and the Indians are going to be pretty good.
About that.
The AL Central, it's all about the AL Central. Like, you got to win your
because
division.
Because you play so many games.
Yeah.
About that. So I think the balance of good and bad is becoming more of a seesaw.
Mm-hmm.
Just the way it is. There's a lot of teams embracing the rebuild, a lot of teams embracing tearing it down. The Twins are going to get better. They're only going to get better. I like what I see there. The Indians are going to be about as good as they've been. Red Sox and Yankees are going to steal a lot of wins from people. So the better teams are going to get better. The worst teams are going to just stay there, kind of. And so it's going to be hard to get to the postseason.
Chuck, can you give me a number so I can just say yes or no? Give me a number of wins.
For the White Sox?
We'll do that podcast later. We're going to predict. But yeah, give me a range where it's like, that's compete. And then I'll feel like I can give you a yes or a no.
Yeah, I think it's more about they're going to compete throughout
the season.
How they're
going to play the game. Sure.
And they're going to win more games. I could see them. Okay, the max, I could see them, if everything goes right and they can stay healthy, Aloy comes up.
Yeah, I'm assuming all of that, correct.
All that, yes. They win 85 games.
That's a wild card.
Yeah.
Not this year.
That's saying everything goes right. To hell that's right. God, that'd be awesome.
But I'm not saying it's going to happen, but listen. I could see the scenario. I'm following Cooper's lead.
Fine. I'm going to go more in your 10-game scenario. I'll take the 77 and 85. And they're going to compete for a while, but they just won't have enough. They'll come up short.
Okay. Now, that is more realistic. Okay. I would say that's probably going to end up happening with the White Sox. But you asked me.
I did.
What's the ceiling?
And you gave me a number, and I said no. I don't think.
Okay.
But here's.
There's a ceiling, and then there's, well, what's the median?
I hope that happens.
Okay. No, but what I was getting at earlier, okay, so the Yankees and the Red Sox are getting better, a little better. The Indians, the Twins are improving. So my point is, to get the wild card, it's going to take more games now. 85, no way. You're going to need minimum 90 games to get a wild card this year.
I don't know how the season's going to go. Because the better teams are getting better.
The gap between the good and the bad is wider.
They're just going to win more games, though. They're going to win 104 games. That's fine.
Yeah, but you're going to have the Astros are going to be good. The Angels are getting better. All these teams are getting better. Then there's a lot of teams that are getting worse and bottoming out.
I think what's going to end up happening is you're going to have a top-heavy league,
yep.
Bottom-heavy.
Right.
And then you're going to have, like,
the 85
eight teams
team.
In the middle. So yeah. That's between yeah, but 75 no, and 80.
The point are there's going to be enough of the haves to all be above 90 wins. So you're
wild card,
no shot anymore. That's just what I believe.
All right.
That's just the way the game is going.
Do you think the White Sox can compete in 2018?
Compete is, in my definition, is get better and be hovering around the 500 mark. I think 77 wins is a reasonable goal.
Okay.
And I think the absolute max is maybe 82.
Okay. Don't hold me to the number yet. We wait until the start of the season. It's silly. We're here. Yep. The spring training hasn't even started.
Right.
But the point of this podcast is, can the White Sox compete in 2018? I think there is enough going on so far, as we sit here in the middle of or end of January, there's the potential for them to be competitive and, yes, compete. Are they going to win a World Series? No way!
No, but here's the deal. This is year two of a rebuild.
Right.
Year two. Let's take that 10-win difference and
be happy with it.
That's excellent progress.
I agree. I mean, I'm sure Rick Hahn's like, slam the brakes, Garfine. Slam the brakes with this. Can we compete? But
I got you, Rick.
All right.
I'm with you, Rick.
And we've got Chris Kamka with a Campus Corner on about a guy who probably is going to make the Hall of Fame on Wednesday. We've got that and more coming up next on the White Sox Talk podcast, brought to you by Wintrust. Back in a moment. Keep your money local. Bring it home to a Wintrust Community Bank, home of White Sox checking with free ATMs nationwide. Find out more at Wintrust.com/Sox, members FDIC.
Hi, guys. I'm Tara Lipinski.
And I'm Johnny Weir.
Guess what, Johnny?
What?
The Winter Olympics are right around the corner. And what does that mean?
Yay. That means we get to see Shaun White, Michaela Schifrin, and other top Team USA athletes conquer fresh snow and ice this February on NBC.
So make sure you're ready. Sign up for NBC Sports and Olympics emails by texting POD to 66866. Or you can visit nbcolympics.com/newsletters to receive the latest athlete updates, giveaways, and more.
Message and data rates may apply. Winter is here.
In this edition of Kamka's Corner, Chris, what do you have?
Well, tomorrow's the Hall of Fame day, right?
Yeah.
Jim Thome is getting in. So let's celebrate the career of one of our favorite players. Just appreciate how good he is. I mean, a lot of times you see these cases being made for Hall of Fame players, it's the ones who are on the fence. So you don't get all these like Twitter storms of Jim Thome stats because it's a given, right? You see the Edgar Martinez, Larry Walker, Scott Rowland, Mike Mussina campaigns going out there. Great. I think they're all worthy. You don't see enough Jim Thome because it's pretty much a fact that he's getting in. So let's go over it, right? So he was drafted in 1989 in the 13th round by the Indians. 13th round. He was drafted in the same round as Rodney Peete.
The quarterback?
USC Trojan?
USC quarterback Rodney Peete was selected by the A's as a third baseman in the 13th round of the 1989 MLB draft. And this is where Jim Thome came into the league. And he looked a little thinner when he came up. Started out as a third baseman. And he's one of five members of the 500 home run club to hit multiple triples before he hit his first major league home run. And the others are Reggie Jackson, who hit four, Frank Thomas, who hit three, Willie McCovey and Jimmy Fox hit two apiece. So that's fun, right? And then he eventually get to a point where you end up with 612 career home runs, which is the most by an Illinois-born player in major league history.
Oh, I like that.
Which is 252 more than the next player.
Who is?
Who is?
Give me a hint.
Centralia.
Oh, from Centralia, Illinois.
Centralia.
I'll never guess.
Gary Gaetti.
Oh, yes, I heard.
He passed Gary Gaetti and took off. He ended up with 252 more home runs than Gary Gaetti. Number one all-time Illinois-born players. Over 1,000 players born in Illinois played Major League Baseball. And so he ended up with over 10,000 plate appearances. 86 players have done that. How many of the 86 have accumulated a 400 on-base percentage? 14. And Jim Thome's one of those. In fact, the 600 home run, 400 on base, 550 slugging percent club in Major League history is a three-man club. Barry Bonds, Babe
Ted
Ruth,
Williams? Oh,
Jim Thome.
I had Babe.
Bailey.
Barry, Babe, Thome. 600.
Oh, he's getting in.
It's kind of like, this guy had quite a career. Seasons with 100 runs, 100 RBIs, and 100 walks. You know, Jim Thome had 8, as did Ted Williams.
But Frank?
The only players with more, 9, Frank Thomas. 10, Barry Bonds. 10, Babe Ruth. Or 11, Babe Ruth. 11, Lou Gehrig. That's it.
So do you think he cries when he gets the phone call?
He doesn't seem the type to me that would.
He did cry for different reasons when he signed with the Phillies.
Maybe.
And he got caught up in emotion, realizing he left Cleveland.
You never know. I know I would. I mean, I was
when Chris Canva gets the phone call for Cooperstown.
I was tear for tear with Frank Thomas during his speech. It was bad. But no problem. Yeah. Hey, 13 career walk-off home runs, most all time.
Love it.
Huh? How about that?
500th.
Yep, he's awesome, big man. he was the true three true talent man. He had 154 games with a walk, a homer, and a strikeout. 154 games with that.
You
nobody
love that
has
stat.
More.
Yeah.
I call it the Dunn because Dunn was more the essence. You can't just be changing the name of it when somebody gets more. I picked Dunn and I stuck with it.
I still call it the Thome, but that's you.
But for White Sox fans' perspective, what a splash he made when he came here, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's like,
racing.
Oh, you traded for Rowan. I think offensively it was the right move.
Yep.
The pitching fell apart. It had nothing to do with the offense.
Homered in his first game.
Homered in his first two games.
Oh.
He hit six home runs in his first nine games with the White Sox.
Wow.
Six in his first nine. He hit 14 home runs in his first.
That 16 was so good.
The offense was as good as I've ever remembered.
So exciting.
14 home runs in his first 31 games.
Wow.
He started with a bang. And he's like his last player I can remember go, well, I think Bryce Harper did, but that's near here and there. He went 0-for-0 with five walks for the Sox once. I mean, he drew a walk. He was so patient. I loved watching him hit. He swung the bat effortlessly. Didn't even look like he was swinging all that hard. Didn't have a violent swing. But he was just so big, and he just launched the ball. He just mastered it. And you know how he'd stand at the plate and just hold his bat out. And it was just I enjoyed watching Jim Thome be a power hitter just about as much as anybody in my life.
All right.
I'm so happy for the guy getting into the Hall of Fame tomorrow, which is a foregone conclusion.
Are you going to cry?
Who's going to cry first, Jim Thome or Chris Kamka?
If I was at the induction ceremony, yeah. Okay. Because you get emotional there. Yeah. I mean, it's special something. Place. I can't recommend it enough. But just watching the Hall of Fame thing on TV, nah, not really.
All right. Well, we got to wrap things up. We're gonna have full blown coverage on all platforms here at NBC Sports Chicago with the should be 100% announcement that Jim Thome is gonna get in the Hall of Fame. So we got a lot of cool stuff planned for that. And Sox Fest opening ceremonies. Got some special seminars planned. We're gonna have a seminar with me, Jason Benetti, hosting it with Rick Renteria and Rick Hahn on Friday night, which
Watch
will be airing on
live.
Our channel.
6 p.m.
At 6 p.m.
Yep.
And got podcasts up the wazoo. I just said that. Can I say up the wazoo?
Yeah, because it's true.
So lots going on. So be on the lookout for that great stuff. Chris Kampka and Ryan McGuffey. And we will see you next time on the White Sox Talk podcast, brought to you by Wintrust Community Bank, home of White Sox checking with free ATMs nationwide. Go to their special White Sox webpage, www.wintrust.com/Sox, and we'll see you at Sox Fest.